Chapter 3. "Gordon," she said. But it wasn't David Gordon. It was his mother who opened the door, looking out into the night darkness and smiling vaguely at the girl standing on the porch. "Why, Mary Ann," Mrs. Gordon said. "How nice. Is Dave home?" She had, in jeans and cloth coat, left her own house as soon as dinner was over. The sense of escape was strong in her, and she had the ad in her purse. "Have you had dinner?" Mrs. Gordon asked. Warm dinner smell drifted out. "I'll go upstairs to his room and see if he's still in." "Thanks," she said, breathing her impatience, hoping he was home because it made things more convenient. She could go to the Wren alone, but it was better to have somebody along. "Don't you want to come inside, dear?" It seemed natural that her son's fiancée should come in. The woman held the door open, but Mary Ann stayed where she was. "No," she said. She had no time. She was hunted down by the need to act. Damn it, she thought the car's gone. The Gordon's garage was empty, so Dave was out. Well, that was that. "Who's there?" Arnold Gordon's hospitable voice sounded as he materialized with his newspaper and pipe, slippers on his feet. "Mary, come on in here. What's the matter with you standing out there?" Backing down the steps, she said, "Dave isn't home, is he? It doesn't matter. I just wanted to find out." "Aren't you coming in? Just the old folks, Mary. Look, how about ice cream and cake, and we can chat?"
"We haven't seen you in so long," Mrs. Gordon added.
"Goodbye," Mary Ann said.
"Dear," she thought, "how wonderfully my new egg dicer works. You must take it when you and David set up housekeeping. Any date yet? Have some more ice cream."
"Dave's at the Junior Chamber of Commerce meeting," Arnold said, emerging on the porch. "How have you been, Mary? How's the folks?"
"Fine," she said, closing the gate after her. "If he wants me, I'm at the Wren. He'll know."
Hands in the pockets of her coat, she started walking in the direction of the Lazy Wren. The bar was smoky with the confusion of drinking people. She pushed among the tables, past the individuals clustered around the bandstand, and to the piano. At the piano was Paul Nitz, the intermission pianist. Slumped over, he gazed off into space, a lean, shaggy blonde young man with a dead cigarette between his lips, his long fingers tapping at the keys. Lost in his trance, he smiled up at the girl.
"I thought I heard," he murmured, "Buddy Bolden say."
Into the texture of his music he wove a hint of the old Dixie tune. The thread, elaborated and diminished, was lost in the dominant theme, the bop tune, Sleep. Assembled at the piano were very few admirers listening to Nitz ramble. Eyes half shut, he nodded to one of them. The listener's face responded, and the two men nodded sagely together.
"Yes," Nitz said, "I thought I heard him as clearly as I see you now. News for you, Mary?"
"What?" she said, leaning against the piano.
"Nose is running."
"It's cold outside," she said, brushing her nose with the edge of her hand. "Is he going to sing soon?"
"Cold," Nitz echoed.
He ceased playing, and from around the piano his few admirers drifted off. The real group waited at the bandstand, and they were more patient.
"You don't care," he said to the girl. "You won't be here. Miners. The world's full of miners. Do you care if I'm playing? Do you come and listen to me?"
"Sure, Paul," she said, liking him.
"I'm a hole. I'm a faintly audible hole."
"That's right," she said, sitting down on the bench beside him. "And sometimes you aren't even audible."
"I'm a musical silence between moments of greatness."
She felt a little calmer and looked around the bar, measuring the people, listening.
"Good group tonight."
Nitz passed her the remains of his unlit reefer.
"You want this? Take it. Be delinquent. Go to hell in a bucket."
She dropped the cigarette to the floor.
"I want to ask your advice."
Since she was here anyhow. Getting to his feet, Nitz said, "Not now. I have to go to the bathroom." He started unsteadily off. "I'll be back." Now she sat alone, picking without enthusiasm at the keys of the piano and wishing Paul would return. He was at least a benign presence. She could consult him because he made no demands on her. Withdrawn into his private obsessions, he ambled between the Wren and his one-room apartment, reading Western novels and constructing bop tunes on his piano.
"Where's your pal?" he said, plodding back and settling himself beside her. "That kid, the one with the clothes."
"Gordon, at the Junior Chamber of Commerce meeting."
"Did you know that I was once a member of the First Baptist Church of Chicala, Arkansas?"
Mary Ann was not interested in the past. Burrowing in her purse, she produced the ad she had cut from the leader.
"Look," she said, pushing it to Nitz. "What do you think?"
He examined the ad at great length and then returned it to her.
I already have a job.
Not you, me.
Restlessly, she put the ad away and closed her purse. It was, of course, the new record shop on Pine Street. She had noticed the remodeling, but she couldn't go there until tomorrow, and the strain was wearing her down.
I was a member in good standing, Mitch said. Then I turned against God. It happened all of a sudden. One day I was saved, and then...
He shrugged fatalistically. Suddenly I was moved to get up and denounce Jesus. It was the strangest thing. Four other church members followed me to the altar. For a while I traveled around Arkansas converting people away from religion. I used to follow those Billy Sunday caravans. I was sort of a Blue Monday nits.
I'm going over there, Marianne said, tomorrow morning before anybody else does. They'll have to call, but I know where it is. I'd be good on a job like that.
Sure, Mitz agreed.
I'd have a chance to talk to people, instead of sitting in an office typing letters. A record store is a nice place. Something's always going on. Something's always happening.
It's lucky for you, Nitz said, that Eaton stepped out.
Taft Eaton was the owner of the Wren.
I'm not afraid of him.
A Negro was crossing the room, and she sat suddenly very upright on the piano bench, and she forgot Nitz beside her because there he was. He was a large man with blue-black skin, very shiny, and, she imagined, very smooth. He stooped, a slump of his muscular body. That was an unbending of his personality, and she, watching him, could feel it flowing across and reaching her even where she sat. His hair glowed oilily, thick, rippled. Important hair, elaborately attended to. He nodded to several couples. He inclined his head toward the people waiting at the bandstand, and then he passed on, massive in his dignity.
There he is, Nitz said.
She nodded.
That's Carlton B. Tweeney, Nitz said. He sings.
He's big, she said, and watched fixedly. Jesus, she said, look at him.
It made her ache to see him, to imagine him. He could lift a truck. It had been a week now. She had first spotted him on the 6th, the day his stand at the Wren opened. He had, they said, come down from the East Bay, from a club in El Cerrito. In this interval, she had measured him, gauged him, absorbed from a distance as much as possible.
Still want to meet him? Nitz asked.
Yes, she said, and shuddered.
You're sure hopped tonight.
She poked Nitz with her elbow urgently.
Ask him if he'll come over. Come on, please.
He was approaching the piano. He identified Nitz, and then his great dark eyes took in the sight of her. She felt him noticing her and becoming aware of her. Again she shuddered, as if she were rising through cold water. She closed her eyes for an instant, and when she looked again, he was gone. He had started on, his hand around his drink.
Hey, Nitz said without conviction.
Sit.
Tweeney halted. I got to go make a phone call.
1 second, man.
No, I got to go call.
There was weary importance in his voice.
You know I have matters on my mind.
To Marianne, Nitz said, golf with the president. She started to her feet, resting the palms of her hands on the piano top, leaning forward.
Sit down.
He contemplated her.
Problems, he said,
and at last found an empty chair at a nearby table. Dragging it over with one scoop of his hand, he sat beside her. She settled slowly back, aware of his closeness, aware, in a kind of controlled hunger, that he had stopped because of her. So the coming here had not been wasted after all. She had got him, for a little at least.
What problems? Nitz inquired.
The magnitude of Tweeney's preoccupation increased.
I'm on the 3rd floor. The hot water heater's up there, the one for the whole building.
Studying his manicured nails, he said,
the bottom rusted through and sprang a leak. It's leaking water down on the gas jets and on my floor.
Indignation entered his voice.
It'll ruin my furnishings.
Did you call the landlady?
Naturally, Tweeney scowled. A plumber was supposed to show up. The usual runaround.
He lapsed into moody silence. Her name's Marianne Reynolds, Nitz said, indicating the girl.
How do you do, Miss Reynolds? Tweeney said with a formal nod.
Marianne said, your singing is real cool. The man's dark eyebrows moved.
Oh, thank you.
I come here every chance I get.
Thank you. Yes, I believe I've noticed you. Several nights, in fact. Tweeny stirred. I have to go phone. I can't have my sofa ruined.
Imported Tasmanian mohair, Nitz murmured, the extinct, primitive, fuzzy-haired moe. Tweeny was on his feet.
Glad to have met you, Miss Reynolds. I hope I'll see you again.
He departed in the direction of the phone booth. The green, fuzzy-haired moe, Nitz added.
What's the matter with you? Marianne demanded, annoyed by Nitz's sing-song of dissent. I read about a hot water heater that exploded and killed a whole bunch of children.
You read that in an ad, a prudential ad. 7 danger signs of cancer. Why didn't I insure my roof?
Nitz yawned.
Use aluminum pipe, deters garden pests.
Marianne looked after Tweeny, but she could no longer see him. The haze had swallowed him up. She wondered how it felt to know somebody like him, to have such a big man nearby.
You're wrong, Nitz said.
She started.
What?
About him. I can tell the way you're looking. There you go again, another plan.
What plan?
Always. You in your coat and your hands in your pockets. Standing around somewhere with that worried, plotting look on your face. Waiting for somebody to show. What's the trouble, Mary? You're smart enough. You can take care of yourself. You don't need Braves and Noodlehead to protect you.
He's got poise, she said.
She was still watching. He was bound to reappear.
I respect that. Poise and bearing.
What's your father like?
She shrugged. None of your business.
My father, Nitz said, used to sing me goodnight songs.
So, she said, fine.
They do that, Nitz murmured.
Mum, 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 he trailed off sleepily.
Oh, I see my coffin coming, mummo. Wump, woo, woo.
He tapped on the piano with a coin.
Now play it. Yeah.
Marianne wondered how Nitz could be sleepy when there were so many things to worry about. Nitz seemed somehow to expect the world to take care of itself. She envied him. She wished suddenly that she could let go for a moment, relax long enough to have comforting illusions. In her mind appeared the remnant of a long-ago rhythm, a terrifying lullaby. She had never forgotten it. If I should die before I wake... Don't you believe in God? She said to Nitz.
He opened one eye. I believe in everything. In God, in the United States, in power steering.
You're not much help. In the corner of the bar, Carlton Tweeny had reappeared. He was chatting with groups of patrons. Tolerant, superior, he moved from table to table.
Pay no attention to him, Nitz mumbled. He'll go away.
The shape of Carlton Tweeny neared, and again she tensed herself. Nitz radiated disapproval, but she was far above caring. She had made up her mind. Now, in a quick single motion, she was on her feet. "Mr. Tweeny," she said, and apparently her feeling was there in her voice because he paused.
"Yes, Miss Marianne," he said.
She was suddenly nervous. "How's your hot water heater?"
"I don't know."
"What did the landlady say? Didn't you call her?"
"I called, yes, but I couldn't get hold of her."
Breathlessly, afraid he would start on, she demanded, "Well, what are you going to do?" The man's lips twitched, and gradually his eyes filmed behind shadow. Turning to Paul Nitz, who was still slumped at the piano bench, he said,
"Is she always like this?"
"Most of the time. Mary lives in a universe of leaky pots." She flushed. "I'm thinking of the people downstairs," she said defensively.
"What people?" Tweeny asked.
"You're on the top floor, aren't you?" She hadn't lost him yet, but he was beginning to slide away. "It'll drip down on them. It'll ruin their walls and ceilings." Tweeny started off.
"They can sue the landlady," he said, dismissing the subject.
"How long before you're through singing?" Marianne asked, hurrying after him.
2 hours. He grinned with superiority.
2 hours? Maybe they'll be dead by then. She had a vision of chaos, erupting geysers of water, splintered boards, and behind everything else, the sound of fire. "You better go over right now. You can sing later. It isn't fair to those other people. Maybe there are children downstairs. Are there?"
Tweeny's amusement faded to exasperation. It did not please him to be bossed. "Thank you for your interest."
"Come on," she had decided. He gaped at her with dense vacantness.
"What's that, Miss Marianne?"
"Come on!" She caught hold of his sleeve and tugged him toward the door. "Where's your car?"
Tweeny was indignant. "I'm perfectly capable of handling the situation."
"In the lot? Is your car in the lot?"
"I don't have a car."
he admitted sulkily. His cream and yellow Buick convertible had recently been repossessed. How far is it?
Not far. 3 or 4 blocks.
We'll walk. She was determined to keep within physical reach of him, and in this urgency she had swallowed his problem whole.
You're coming along? He was asking.
Certainly. She started off. Tweeny reluctantly followed.
Your interest is not necessary.
He seemed to expand behind her to become even taller and more upright. He was a troubled commonwealth. He was an empire plagued at its borders. But she had stirred him into action. She had, in her need of him, prodded him into awareness of her. Holding the street door open, she said, "Stop wasting time. We'll be back. You can sing later."